Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about seed guides from 2026 in our spotlight. We'll take a look at John Kinzenbaugh's 100 antique tractors that he'll be selling from his private collection. Ag History Minute, we'll talk about a local haunted area. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events, and we'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. The return of Christian Watson led to a Packers victory last weekend. That was kind of nice to see him back, and he didn't get injured.
Don't jinx it.
I think he only had like three catches, but 85 yards out of three catches,
and some good pancake blocks. So that helps.
He's a good blocker.
But the real story on National Tight End Day was Tucker Kraft. I think I didn't see the rest of like the Monday night games or anything, but he was near the top of the pack of tight ends for the weekend.
And he got a little trophy.
Yep.
At the end of the day, like a
he did. Yeah, I saw them
trophy.
That was odd because they were supposed to get belts, but they said on national TV like the belts didn't come in.
So oh, really?
I remember them saying that too. Right. That was kind of funny.
Like, it was like. I guess it's appropriate, but are they going to have a belt ceremony later then to explain that?
Well, I think Tucker Kraft took the belt from Aaron Rodgers, given that we defeated the Steelers in that game.
That I thought, I was nervous whenever you do somebody else's celebration, it like almost as a taunt that just never seems to work in our favor.
How many times has other teams done the Rodgers belt when Rodgers was quarterback and then just get hammered.
And so when I believe it was Rashawn Gary did it, I was like, I don't know, I don't know if I like that. I see, you know, I get why you do it, but.
Well, they had us in the first half.
Oh, yeah.
Because we couldn't kick a field goal. Granted, the first one was very long, and McManus was cold. He'd been out for a couple weeks, but.
I think he was still a little injured.
Yeah. So too. I categorize as they were just playing with their food in the first half. They were just kind of.
I was talking with local Packer historian Kevin Jarek at a plot the other day about that. Like, this team is very much that way of, like, score right away in the first, like.
Drive.
First drive and then do nothing for the rest of the first half. Maybe they'll score again, maybe not. And then, like, second half, almost like Eli Manning and the Giants of years ago, like, really play the second half of football a lot better than the first half. But it makes you nervous when just through field goals, the other team is, like, getting ahead. And then they get a touchdown before halftime. It's like, momentum shift. Like, yeah.
I think they scored on every drive in the second half, though, Packers.
The Packers did, yeah.
Yeah, they looked good. It was exciting. Jordan.
The second half was like a whole different game.
Jordan Love looked good. Tucker Kraft is cool, too. Like, he's from Nowheresville, South Dakota.
North Dakota, I think it was.
And I believe
he kept showing like where he was from.
Yeah, in the bar there. And just, I know that area is a huge agriculture area, which is cool. So, I mean, he's just from. Like, when a player is excited to come to Green Bay because it's a big city, that's cool. Like, it's bigger than where he's from. And that area believes a lot of, like, corn, soy, and then just beef cattle and just your old school Dakota area looking farm country. So,
speaking of corn harvest, how's it going? It seems like it's going really well.
It is, but it's also slow.
I agree.
Like, I feel like down south, like, I think up here, we're actually maybe ahead of down south.
Right.
Like, there's a lot of corn stand. I was just down that area yesterday, like, ripping Omro, and it's slow going. Like, there's a number of reasons why. Like, some are saying it's too wet. Some are just waiting on something either to get fixed or to get in place. Like, I was talking to a farm yesterday that their new grain bin wasn't wired the day before it was supposed to be, but they were like 8 feet short of wire, so then they had to come back the next day. It's like, oh, that's terrible.
At that point, you figure you'd just go rip wire from somewhere else. Yeah, I mean, right, sure, it was very, yeah.
Find 8 feet somewhere.
But yeah, I was surprised, like, there was very little movement down in that area. It was also super foggy down there. It was crazy.
I went a different area, which, in general, at Tilth World headquarters, we are more often foggy.
Right.
Than other places, and so it was weird going somewhere, and they're like, man, how about that fog? And I'm like, what fog? It was fine where I, you know, to and when it must have burned off at 10 or 11.
Yeah, when I hit Oshkosh yesterday, I could see it looked like it was, I thought it was going to rain. Like, that's how, like, how dark and gray it was. And as I got closer to, like, Van Dyne, it was near zero visibility in places. Like, it was,
so was
really, really thick. Because it was funny, it was sunny here when I left, fairly, like, for this time of year, warm, because, you know, the sun makes you feel warm.
Yeah, warm, yeah.
I think I lost, like, 8 degrees going down there.
Sure.
Like, the temperature change was noticeable. Like,
well, and obviously it's foggy, there's no sun.
Right.
And there's not sun burning it off till later.
But, yeah, it wasn't until, like, 10:30, 11 o'clock it finally kind of burned off, and then the sun started peeking out, so...
Yeah, I headed ahead to I took our way wagon to a plot, and yeah, when I arrived at the plot, they're like, "Oh, is the fog messy up?" I'm like, "No, it was fine all the way, and it must have just kind of lifted."
Sure.
For them, and yeah, way wagon worked great. Did the plot fine? It wasn't that far away, but it was across the Fox River, so you have to kind of pick your
like crossing.
I drove through Wrightstown. Yeah. Wrightstown now is great.
Yep.
And then on the way back, I actually went through De Pere in a way, and that I immediately regretted because it's just...
Did you have to go through the big roundabout?
Yes.
Just the little roundabout.
Yes. And it was like, yeah, it wasn't... That's never great. And roundabouts with it were fine. And luckily with what progressed, it was maybe better in a roundabout. But it seemed fine and just took my time and drove it back. And as I pulled into Tilth World headquarters with it, like a truck drove in right behind me. And like, oh, that's never good. You know, usually they're...
Right, what's dragging behind?
Right,
or,
like something's happened. And, you know, like he didn't get out of his truck or nothing. So I like saw him pull in and then I stopped and got out and, you know, said, how can I help you? And he's like, you know, what do you got going on with your trailer there? And that's how he said it. And like, I don't know, like, it's a way, like, I thought maybe he's, like, never seen it before.
Right, wasn't sure what you were...
And he's like, and that wasn't it, he's like, no, the lights, and I'm like, they worked, and usually I try the lights, like, I hit the flashers, and they worked before I left in the morning, and somebody had used it last week, and we did the same, and they worked, and he's like, no, your blinkers, I'm like, why, what's up with the blinker? He's like, I followed you from Freedom, and when you turn your right blinker on your truck, the left blinker blinks on the machine. Like, honestly, I didn't know that. And he followed me, and then I went and did it, and he's right.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, man, we had rewired like 2 years ago, a year for sure, because the brakes weren't working, so we had our guy rewire it, and he must have wired it wrong, and now I need to change my method of checking if the lights work, because my method typically is...
Well, yeah, flashers.
Get out, check they're both flashing, get in, go. You don't expect it to be backwards. So anyway...
So he thought you were driving backwards, really.
Right. Yeah. No, and, like, I think some of them would have made, you know, from there to Freedom, like, where you're... Like, when you pull off here in a right turn... And you pull it off in the, yeah.
There's no left blinkers on.
Right, right.
There's no left turn to pull into world headquarters.
No.
I mean, the upside, I guess, would be it's in the back. It's going to confuse whoever's behind you, but at least they know you're turning.
Right.
Right.
And you could
see. And the people ahead of you are going to know the right direction. Like, it's not like you're going to have your blinker on and somebody's going to assume you're going left
and then
turn into you because you're both going right.
You're right. Nobody honked at, you know, like, I drove through in roundabouts. The more I thought of it, too, like, I did a million roundabouts because Freedom now has got a lot of, or excuse me, Wrightstown over the bridge is roundabouts and De Pere's all around. And
yeah.
obviously you're not really using blinkers then, no. So nobody
legally
honked at you're supposed to, yeah. But
can you see the truck taillights over the wheel of the wheel wagon?
Yes, you could. So I think that maybe helped too. Like you could kind of see the guy obviously saw that too and noticed they were opposite. But.
Well, when you turned left on 54 from 55,
right? There's no you're not going.
You probably had your left blinker on and the right blinker was blinking.
And I would say it wasn't easily that you could see him, but you could kind of see past, like you say, between the way those are shaped, like you say, the wheel well, but then they're kind of gravity box shaped on both sides. And
the highway would be where you'd see issues, but you weren't on a highway,
right?
Because then, if you were trying to merge, that would get confusing.
Good, yes, they'd be like
very fast,
And like I said, I didn't get honked at, so obviously, nobody was like
in the middle lane of the highway and you got your left blinker on. And
that's always the
right
best
blinker's blinking, and you go left.
And when you're getting honked at for something you don't even know, you just wave it.
Hey, good to see you too.
Like,
yay, farming.
Like, let's go.
Wife and I were taking a walk on the road yesterday, and this lady had her hand out the window just, like, doing something, and we both waved at her. And she drove by, and my wife's like, who's that? I'm like, I have no idea. But I don't think she was waving at us. I was thinking she was, like, throwing something out the window.
She wasn't doing air snakes.
No, she was just, like, I don't know if she had a cigarette or some garbage or something. And And she's like, well, that's great when you drive by somebody and you're chucking something out the window.
It is kind of the curse of the company truck, is I get waved at by people I don't know, but they see the Tilth logo, and they're like, oh, and they just wave.
Well, it's usually open-handed.
Sometimes.
I usually get a fist or one finger sometimes. No, in general, it's...
I think we have truly maybe only one or two black trucks, but dark-colored trucks.
Yep.
So the other guys that drive dark color trucks must not have pissed anybody off lately. So
good job, guys.
Yeah. Or I haven't for them. Maybe they're getting flipped off all the time. I don't know. Maybe I'm the problem.
True.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate that.
You're definitely a better driver than I am. I definitely am not a. There's times where
I thought you were going to say you got pulled over or something.
No, I haven't. I'm
the way wagon.
That too, I didn't see any cops. But I'm just surprised because they definitely would have pulled me over for that. And then I'd have been like, oh man, there's something else.
That's fairly innocent though. I mean, you yourself, like.
Right. You're not.
Yeah.
And there again too, like literally it's been used multiple times since then, and nobody, thankfully this guy did pull in and
you
say
you would know.
Matt, you're planning on using that way wagon next, so we'll have to go flip the wires on it.
I'll have to start using hand signals on the door. I gotta remember, is it bent elbow left or right?
If you see Matt and his head's out the window like Ace Ventura, you know why.
Put my right blinker on so I'm when I'm actually turning left so that people behind me know I'm going left. Just have like a little chart in the cab, like no, I stopped at the farm that potentially gonna use the way wagon on, and he was planting cover crops and they still hadn't started corn yet.
Okay.
So
you'll have to let me know.
We'll
get it fixed.
Yeah. We're safe on the road.
I've got some lights.
There's
from an interceder. I can just magnet on there.
That'd be the other way.
Constantly flashing.
Or they make those are kind of slick, the newer ones where you just, they're the long wire and then they magnet on the back of stuff. I had to use that at times where your lights aren't working right. Or
you just got to get the ones, remember when they had them for bikes, like blinkers for your bicycle? And then I forget how that worked. It was like a switch on the handlebar. But then it was like below the seat.
You think all these electric bikes, do those have blinkers? Like that would because they don't. Yeah, that would have kind of like caught on.
Yeah. All right, you guys ready to get into our topic for today?
Let's do it.
So Todd, this is like your Christmas.
This is my favorite. Do your kids get the Christmas catalogs that come? So it's not the Sears catalog anymore, or.
We get the, usually Target and Amazon. Amazon, it really, I get a good chuckle out of that because they're all online store and they send you a paper.
Sure. Dialogue. Right. I can't think of anything else that they send a paper for.
Right.
So that shows how.
It's not like they send ads or coupons or anything like that.
Like when we were kids, it was the Fleet Farm, like Toyland catalog when that came out.
Yeah.
I don't think. Do they do that anymore?
Toys R Us catalog was awesome.
Yeah, Toys R Us, but that's not really around anymore.
Nope.
I think there's one in Canada yet.
Is there?
I seem to remember seeing something. I thought there was like maybe one in the U.S., but they were still in Canada.
Wow.
But they might have even changed it to like, because what was it, Jeffrey Giraffe? Like Jeffrey's or something? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe they're completely defunct now. I don't know.
Fleet Farm still has the Toyland catalog. I can get it online. I don't know if they print, you know, where you get a printed copy of it or anything.
Yeah, because that used to be like, that would come in the mail. Trying to think. I feel like maybe it was just the generic JCPenney, like, always sent a catalog anyway, but I feel like they maybe had a Christmas one, too, back in the day.
I remember that, yeah. It maybe what it is neat about it, it shows the power of a catalog,
yeah.
Of still having some printed.
Something in your hand.
Because you just hit on the head of the Amazon one. My kids love that one, and when it comes in the mail, they will fight for it and ask grandparents for their, you know, like to, and they all make sure they circle certain things or they got different ways of looking at it.
Surprisingly, there are more locations than I expected for Toys R Us when I went to their website.
I haven't seen Toys R Us in forever.
A lot of East Coast. It says there's still quite a few like around Chicago, Milwaukee.
Well, there's just one by Appleton.
Allegedly, there's one. Not... Yeah, the Fox River one. That's been closed.
They just haven't updated their website
I guess.
5 years.
Yeah, maybe none of these are there. It's just like defunct website. But anyway, yes, catalogs, always something you look forward to as a kid. You'd circle what you wanted.
Target catalog, that one comes to, and 2 years ago they changed it. It used to have like the prices of everything, which was great because then your kid would realize, you know, like you'd say,
this is what it costs.
Well, right, and then they would know, they would choose their circles appropriately. It wasn't like shooting for the stars of something that wasn't going to be purchased for them or not.
Millennium Falcon Lego.
Right, some sort of crazy Lego thing.
Yeah, man. Ultimate Collector's one that's like $900.
Yeah.
So, but that one changed now. There's no prices in that either, similar to our seed guides. Yeah. It doesn't come with a...
I don't ever remember a seed.
No, I don't.
There's no cash discounts in Target catalog.
Yeah. No, we got what programs you have and everything, but no prices along with this.
Well, I think you'd put them in alphabetical order, and your first one here in an alphabetical order is probably the most like a toy catalog.
You're right. So yes, let's start. We're just gonna kind of talk about cool parts of the books, maybe some strengths, maybe some weaknesses, and their catalogs. It's not a comprehensive guide. If yours isn't in there, you feel free to send me one to Tilth World headquarters, and I'd love to look at it because they're the best. But these are the guides. Some companies seemingly went away from them and then maybe came back a little bit, but there was a time where there's a few lists, and some that aren't listed maybe don't kind of work with the catalog. They got more flyers or pages or something like that. But these are specific to the catalogs. And like I said, we're just going to kind of go through and talk about them. And the first one up in alphabetical order is Beck's Seeds. So, and Matt's right. It's got the rewards in the back. And it is kind of like getting a...
Even just the quality of the cover and the quality of the pages. Like, everything is... They spend a good amount of money on their book.
Where else can you find a Browning Maxis shotgun? One page later, a espresso machine.
Espresso machine, nice.
Yep, nope, the Beck's espresso and coffee package.
I do like the Colt Python series.
The Colt Python is there.
Next to the lawn chairs for your patio.
Get a forklift.
You can still get chainsaws, which, Matt, do you remember that chainsaw?
Yes, we had a farm that bought, like, what, 8 chainsaws?
Somehow got, and we're like, what do you need? eight chainsaws for? And he said, Christmas presents.
Hey, Todd, there's a Dickie John oyster thing in here.
Nice. It's probably the newer version, even. The 2700, I believe, is the newest.
Yeah, it's the GAC 2700.
Yeah.
Nice. Only need 11 points. I don't know. I don't remember how many bags that is, but just got to buy some seed, Todd, and then you can get a new mini GAC.
It's 11 million.
11 million. You can get a seed tender, golf cart.
They do need to put a little more effort in the actual seed part.
Right, so that is one downside. Big, you know, big catalog, you got products, which is the seed, and then kind of the programs in the middle telling you about their different discounts and stuff, and then the back is the rewards. And I agree with you, Bill, on that of, like, the we want this for the – I actually hadn't looked through the back yet at all. I had just looked through the seed part, and
– That's pretty
– There is – pretty good of you. I do agree they could go a little bit harder into the – needs more info on the seed. You know, I think there's – it's clear and concise. I like the charts. I like the explanation. But I get it where they're, you know, where can you put the fun pictures and all that of people, and how many farmers get this and go back first, you know, to go to the back first and then
right.
look at the seed.
And they're probably getting their info from their sales rep on which varieties are good and where to place
right.
them. And guys like us, right? That's where they're getting their info. So maybe they just focus on talking to the people that know the varieties, and then they get to go shopping.
One of the things to note as we go through books, some of them have sort of charts only, and some will have what I call, I don't know, what they'd be like a highlight list where they've got maybe a little bit more graphs to the varieties, and some of them put those in different spots. And this one is a like sort of a charts only. It's just charted, and then it tells you, you know, all the characteristics and the recommendations and the traits. GDUs and day lengths and stuff, and yeah, so that is one thing with this guy. Like you say, maybe they could add a little bit more of featuring certain really good hybrids with some charts and some other.
We'll say for me, one of the most important things in a seed guide is the GDUs.
Right, yeah,
use that a lot.
Yes, and upfront GDUs put right away, yeah. Not somewhere, and maybe to some of our listeners be like, well, it's always there. We're with us dealing with a little more silage, with some of these silage varieties, the GDUs aren't always listed. They're put in a different spot, or you got to look.
Or even just like
green as well.
They usually do to black layer, right? Most
right.
But
right.
then some are like to first silk to like
yeah.
the silage end of it, where you're trying to match that up. They all don't categorize to the same. Like maturity level, as far as when they're doing that for silking or for silage harvest, so that's a little different. But
yeah, I think that's even really more important than maturity sometimes, because we all know the maturities can be a little bit, and that's not exclusive to any one company. They're, you know, they float a little bit sometimes.
Yeah.
It's a one of my favorite things about when we do the seed meetings is, well, this is a 100-day, but it acts more like 103, or...
We needed a 100-day, so we categorize it as 100, because we just needed one. We didn't need another 103.
Yeah.
That is why those GDUs are so nice, because yeah, right. that's something a little more precise.
And when you're trying to match up some type of a... Instead of throwing a dart at a dartboard to hit harvest with different varieties, well, let's look at the GDUs and try to match those up so you can... You know, pick a variety of GDUs to harvest so that we can get those planted in the correct order.
And then Mother Nature just screws it all up. Well, everything gets planted within 4 days. But
we try. We try, Matt.
I know.
So the next one up, guys, is the Brevant. And this is more of a training manual than a sort of a seed guide or seed catalog. So the next two actually... More are we're going to talk about Channel Seeds next. Different parent companies for both of these, but they have, in our region anyway, they're kind of more of a training manual, or you know, this
it's almost like a tech sheet for each.
Yes.
Right. They're full page, hybrid. Like hybrid breakdowns in this one, which is kind of nice. Like gives you, takes the chart, but breaks it down into each variety as opposed to having to follow a line. Because I will say one thing with charts that I had a farm experience this year was they thought they had a variety that was Enlist corn.
Ooh.
Okay.
And then they followed their finger across the chart and were off a line. And it was between two Enlist varieties.
Did they know this after they sprayed with said Enlist or before? Because
they found out after.
Yeah.
Because they sprayed the Enlist because they thought that from the finger test.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Which, not blaming the seed company or anything, but, you know.
Right, that, that's not.
But when you have a whole page of lines on a chart, it's and you it's easy to get off a line.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a, it's it was an honest mistake. It was a mistake that the farm regrets, but it was something that was kind of became kind of tricky in that kind of scenario. So that is the benefit of having this, you know, not saying everyone needs a full page like Brevant gives you, but, you know, having some sort of breakdown, because, I mean, if I look at the page, I just flipped to this 112 day, and it's Vorseed Enlist right there, top of the page, right under the variety. Okay, it's Enlist, I know it. I don't have to put my finger on the page
and scroll across. Yeah.
So I would say that's a benefit.
Yeah, tons of info in here. Almost, like you say, when you got a tech sheet, you're getting everything you need. Looking online, I couldn't actually find, they did have seed guides for Canada, but I wasn't able to find, because some of these will have seed guides online or kind of went to that format. And Brevant was one where it was, I couldn't find, I mean, I'm guessing they're there somewhere, but I couldn't find them.
Sorry, Todd.
But there was
sorry.
A, no, Canada had them, North America.
Sorry. Didn't mean to misconstrue anything there. Sorry.
Sorry, you can't get your seed guide. We can get you a bunch of tech sheets, say.
You guys coming up to Saskatoon? For the canola harvest this year?
Eh?
Eh? I don't, I'm assuming they grow canola in Saskatoon. I don't
know.
Oh,
they do.
I'm assuming they grow canola everywhere in Canada. Oh, yeah. It's like the national flower. That may be overstating, but.
No, but it's all.
It is a very prevalent crop up there.
All right, next up on the list is Channel Seeds.
They gave us a playbook.
Yeah, I like the name. I just like the name playbook.
Yeah, they didn't give us a seed guide. This isn't a guide. This is a playbook. Like, this is how you're going to beat your competition right here.
Green 19? Green 19 set?
I actually was surprised he didn't try to... He didn't try to get the Packers on his 12 men on the field.
Oh.
More.
Yeah.
I know he tried. I think he tried to get him off sides on a hard count once or twice, but I don't think he tried the 12 men on the field deal, which surprised the hell out of me.
Yeah, no, I don't remember that either. Maybe the Packers just knew he would, and so they were very careful with their substitutions. I don't know.
Crazy.
I mean, he did do that a lot when he was here. So
right.
Yes,
right.
He did. But anyway.
Sorry, sidetrack.
This playbook.
So this, too,
again,
is...
Again, you've got a nice kind of breakdown of each variety in these pages, but you also have some of the charts and other stuff too.
One thing they gave us that I had not seen is the corn product life cycle. And at first when I read it, I didn't understand what it meant, because it would say like growth, mature, decline, phase out, retire, yep. launch was at the beginning. And so I thought that was kind of a neat thing that I hadn't seen before.
It's like basically,
right,
like,
don't get married to this variety. Yeah.
Right,
it's mature and probably not going to be around.
Pick right. All the growth ones.
So the yeah, so like launch is first year growth.
This is ground control to Major Tom. Oh, Todd, that was a pretty UFO sounding.
That was yeah.
Noise your phone just made.
This is an old normal alarm.
Get
sorry,
kids,
should
have, kids in school.
Yeah,
it's time to get up, Todd.
Yeah, no, that's should have. To shut that off. Apologize. That's the launch noise.
Ah.
That's the, and then growth, mature, so that means like kind of like at its peak in a way, you know, where you might want to pick some of those and then decline their, it's 80% of peak sales still producing for sale, but it's kind of on the decline, and then phase out is just, it's going to be gone soon and then retire. I don't, that one was odd because I'm not sure how many they're going to, I wouldn't think you'd put it in the book if it's on the retire side. But yeah, in general, that, I mean, we know that which ones are older and younger in general, but you don't always know either though where they're at in the grand scheme of the company's idea too. Like it might be old to us, but they keep it a couple more years, or they're already going to just move on from it. So I did like that.
There still is a couple spots in here where they show what hybrid it compares to for the Youngs.
Sure.
Yeah. There's a couple. It's not as much as it used to be, but they do have the Young's hybrids listed next to it, which is always good.
Even online, I remember looking at some of the online channel stuff, and like it's still there, but I remember last year it was like you could there's a drop down for like every brand that had been merged in, and that wasn't as obvious. It might still be there, but it wasn't as obvious as it was last year.
I like that. That kind of shows where they're at in that transition of, we're still putting a little information for you if you're tied to the old, you know, regional brand that you're used to, but we're kind of, by now you're used to looking at your channel.
They do have charts in the back, and you may need your readers to.
Yeah, they were a little bit read them. A little bit small font, but.
Bill, do you use readers?
I
yet?
Don't.
Okay,
yet.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's something.
I don't yet, but sadly,
you're getting there.
In the last 2 years, I can really tell like I'm getting there. Just you get to a spot where like the light isn't where it should be, and it's like son of a gun. Dang
you're
it.
That, hold it. You're not doing the take a picture on your phone yet.
Zoom
in.
No, I'm not. No.
That's the next step, just so you know. In the reader
phase. Denial. Yeah.
The right. Denial like, I ain't buying them.
Next phone change, you're going to have to go to Consumer Cellular, get the big buttons. And
Yep. No. And maybe then, I should just go get LASIK or I forget the other one where they give you
the
lenses.
Laser stuff, yeah. Next up is Dairyland Seeds. Dairyland's kind of one, you know, that's our first in this list of just a good old school cattle. You know, nothing, there really wasn't many changes lately to this book. It's
right. There's value to consistency
right,
in
like
seed guides.
One thing with this book that I always liked is like, I know because they'll talk about their silage varieties, their dual purpose, and still talk about BMR, but you know where to look in this guide because it's the same as it's always sort of been.
I will say, Todd, if you didn't bring it up, I was gonna. That's what I like most about this book is there's lots of information, but they also have clearly sections for each one of their types of corns, right? Grain corn, their high DF corn, their dual purpose silage. They even break it out high DF versus dual purpose, and then their BMR. So you can go right to the section that you're looking for and find those really quickly.
It's a good blend of charts and information because they start with a chart usually in the beginning of the section, and then you can look at the individual variety in the next couple pages. You don't have to go like front to back or back to front. It does seem to kind of play very nice that way where you're not constantly flipping back and forth through the book too much.
One thing I'd bring up with this book that you'll see, I think traditionally the books had the amount of just the pictures inside and how good they are. You know, it's just picture of corn plants, picture of corn, tassel corn, but then they got, you know, a chopper in a field, pictures of a farm, you know, a farmer talking to his seed guy, like just the amount of sheer pictures is probably more than any other guides currently, and how, you know, they're just all good. Sometimes I've noticed where they'll use same pictures year after year, and this one in general doesn't do that. They're kind of newer pictures each time.
It's interesting here too, because like we were just talking about GDUs to Silk, and we just talked about Brevant, which is a Corteva, and they do GDUs to mid-silk, and Dairyland does GDUs to silk.
Okay.
So,
right.
Need to do some deciphering on how many GDUs is those two distinctions, but it is a little different on how they categorize to their GDUs.
I was pointing out to Bill while you were doing the initial discussion that, and this is neither here nor there, but I just noticed that the map in the back is a little bit off kilter on the very back of the book. Like Wisconsin looks like it's tipping into Minnesota.
It's tilted on its axis.
Right.
It's not, yeah.
Is that how it really is, you think? We just never noticed it? Or
well,
is
I
that
think
it?
They used...
It's like a map of
they used North Dakota as like the...
Sure, make
set
North
it on the top of North Dakota.
Straight,
so everything else was kind of tilted that way, as opposed to had they gone with a... Like, I don't think it's wrong in how, like, the curve, if you were taking into account curvature of the earth and everything, but right. it looks a little goofy.
You're just upset Wisconsin and Michigan are all crooked. And
we are wrong, though, looking at, like, flat maps. Like, that's not how the world,
right?
Yeah. Right?
World
like,
is
when
curved.
We look in our old encyclopedias, maps aren't flat. They are, the world is actually round, Matt.
What? No, flat.
Spherical.
When I get my rocket done and I launch myself up, I'll prove you wrong. Earth is flat. No, like I said, it's not really a criticism. It just kind of it catches your eye a little bit.
I didn't know what you're because you kind of made a face and pointed to something to Bill. And it was just like when you see it, and you're like,
I hadn't noticed that before. Yeah. And so, again, it's probably right in terms of the curvature of the Earth. It just kind of looks funny.
You know what I would give whoever is like the editor and reviewer of Seed Guides is. How little errors in general, you know, with just spelling errors even you think would come in or something where you'd have like, whoa, how did somebody miss that? And honestly, all the guides in general, they do a very good job of what I would say very little errors. So,
and we read these cover to cover.
Well, right. You're right. I'm not
looking no, that I'm hard, just teasing you. It's fine. You're okay.
All right. Next up. We're still in the D's. We're at DeKalb. So DeKalb and Asgrow and...
D's Cobs.
D's,
talking about
D's
Cobs.
Cobs. Just, these are more state-specific. So we talked about other ones give us kind of more of a tech guide or the playbook. These are state-specific. And so then there's kind of in here like recommendations by your local agronomists is how it reads and what it says. So... I think a lot of these too, maybe the downside of this book is sometimes it feels like there's a ton of notes pages or there's blank pages, but I think that's because, you know, they're somewhat developed just for the state and not most other guides are regional. So there's just like a Midwest guide and a different guide. And
this one's pretty much a chart.
Right.
Like the whole book is a chart.
Right.
I would say the font's a little bit bigger probably.
Don't need my readers
for
this one.
Bill doesn't need his readers. And I do appreciate the page break. They list the variety again, so as you're going across.
That is a good point.
That is amazing.
Oh, it's huge.
Yeah.
The other spot I've noticed where that's really important is like if you're looking at a PDF or a digital version of a guide, you sort of need it to be on the other side. So it is nice to be relisted, like you say.
Like, it could be confusing at first, because you're like, oh, it's a different page, different chart. But once you realize it, you're like, oh, that's kind of nice, because now I don't have to, like, the first one doesn't really matter, but as you get subsequently down into the chart, then you don't have to follow your finger across the page as much.
Are you guys used to the three-digit first number on these DeKalb hybrids now? Like, they came out, was it last year with?
Getting used to it, yeah.
Yep.
That is one unique thing, is when I started doing this, that was... going to be one of the topics, like what big changes were there from numbering and all that. And this year in general in the Midwest sort of area seed brands, there was not any changes. So we went through, like you say, the DeKalb change and the Pioneer changed from sort of 4-digit to 5-digit. And then the Syngenta brands changing, they had the 4-digit code of the, like, great. Finally, when we get used to that, the 5220, which was Viptera, whatever it was, them changing last year to putting letters like everybody else had. So anyway, what I would say this year, in general, there was no sort of big changes like no. that, or it was a recalibration of how that looked. Yeah, because the I'm gonna hold up to show you guys my screen of the seed guide for DeKalb of what like the Midwest one looks like, and like I said, we kind of get a state specific one, so kind of a different cover and explain, you know, just some similar stuff, but looks way different than what used to getting, if that makes sense.
Yep. Yeah.
So they have a sort of a seed guide that has different agronomic charts, and like I said, this one's the whole. This has, you know, very short day stuff all the way to long day. So that's one part. Some of our listeners might be like, "What are they talking about?" That's not what I get or I see. It's because there's different marketing things that different companies use. And one of the unique things I thought about this online PDF was it did have crop protection in the guide. So there was, whereas the guide we get is just seed. It doesn't talk about, you know, different like Laudis and
sure the chemical side,
Corvus and some of the Bayer chemicals. So some of them can be sort of unique that way. That'd be one thing to tell farmer if you're like, well, I didn't get a seed guide, I don't have it. Like, just one struggle is if you Google it, you're not gonna get always like it's not always there. But in general, if you just like I just Googled the DeKalb seed guide 2026 and usually there's a PDF link there to seed guide. What I would say is in general, is back to Canada, it does seem like there's more, and I don't know if they just like guides better or something, but there's every company has a Canada guide there as well, where the North America one, and I don't know if it's because there's, you know, you got the Midwest and you got Southern ones that's different. Maybe Texas would be different. Whereas Canada, usually there's an East guide for Canada and a West guide for Canada.
Yeah, well, your prairie provinces, that's majority of your agriculture.
Rain and then, or no rain.
Right.
Bitter cold or just cold?
Yeah. And canola, like you said, or
not
as much canola.
Not as much canola, yeah. Yeah, and sometimes that could be a lot, like, not saying it's not valuable to have like the chemical side in there, but sometimes you're looking at seed and like now when we're buying seed, we're you know there are companies that give you deals on chemical if you buy all their seed and all that kind of stuff, but sometimes it just gets to be a lot to go through the book and have to go through some of that stuff. So it is kind of nice sometimes not to have that, and sometimes it's nice to have it. So
next up we got Golden Harvest and NK, so your sort of Syngenta brands. This one to me is by far the most informative catalog. It used to be huge, now it's just sort of big and has I think a good way to set up to where you have you this starts with sort of the different corn, you know, where a map of the US where it goes, maturities, you know, the rating 9-1, and then you see it in like a, it's got little circles that are filled in, and then just a little explanation of it. And then you get into the chart of each. And it's just good. This one, I think always kind of had good, you know, informative, probably maybe a little bit low on the font for you, Bill, on the chart.
I say this is more of a cheater chart again.
Yeah.
Patent pending.
Now I'm the old guy that can't see, apparently.
Yep, you open that door. Well, you're the oldest one sitting at the table right now.
Fair,
so
fair. You'll catch up to me at some point.
What's your 5-year plan, Bill? Not die?
Yeah. No.
Yeah, I mean, this one has some color coding in some charts when you get into some of the different categories, which, I mean, is good. It's I'm trying to think how to word this. It's how you would expect it. Like green is good. Dark green is very good. Regular green's good. Yellow is like okay, and red is
stay away,
or this trait isn't as valuable. And so, I do like that. from the standpoint of it's fairly easy to read that way, whereas sometimes they'll just throw colors in and it's just to just have differentiation, whereas the stoplight colors seem fairly universal and a good way to kind of catch things at a glance.
I always wonder which guide is the most expensive to print. And I got to think this one is because, like Matt just said, you got a lot of color saturation, so it's more costly in general. And then even, like, the size of the book, it's, like, 1 inch bigger than the rest.
I was going to say, other than Beck's.
Okay.
Beck's is about the same size.
And you're right. Beck's
same size and thickness, or way bigger thickness.
Yeah, more thickness.
And you're right. Bill started with that, how Beck's has all the other stuff, too. So, yeah, you're right. Beck's and that one got to be... What's interesting is Beck's goes, like, it's the same size, same thickness, but one's sort of portrait and one's landscape, mm-hmm. which is kind of interesting. But you're right. These two, they're definitely,
they're the non-standard size pages. Yeah.
All right. Next up, we got LG, which this one, they have kind of a football theme to it or sports theme. Right away, where they got their big five starting lineup, and then they name them the Rocket, the General.
It's kind of neat because just like if you want to pick a couple, like I want to try you just LG, go to the big five, and then okay, I want a 95 day. Well, here's your General. It's 96 day. That's the one I'm going to pick because they're saying it's one of their better ones in their whole lineup. So it's easy to find like the big guns in their lineup.
The real deal.
Yeah, I you're right, Bill, of like right away you just could go to that and you know, okay, I want some of these hybrids. These are the real highlights, if you will. The it does have some QR codes here and there, which is interesting. I don't know if how many guys actually are gonna do that. Like if you're looking at a guide, I just
as time goes on, more and more people will.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. As you get into some of the individual variety breakdowns, they have that plant drawing of a corn plant to kind of give you the layout of like here's what it should look like.
What I thought, I always thought traditionally it was like because then it points to each spot, like it's how tall it is, all that. What I was thinking is I used to think those were drawn different, like to how that corn actually was. Now it's like the same drawing.
It's the same drawing, but it gives you
I just in today's AI, I wonder if you could take a picture of that and just have AI draw each of them would be kind of cool. But it is nice where it points out. No real charts in this one, more of the kind of variety by variety explanations. But a lot of, like Matt said, where it's got the corn plant and, you know, at the bottom for each spot it's got where you can take notes of the hybrid and just has a nice layout that way to really get a lot of info.
Yeah, and they do the same thing with soybeans. They get a drawing of a soybean and gives you things to look at from the overall plant and also then individual pods as well.
We did get a forage book, which we got a grain book and a forage book, and it's okay, but then now you're carrying around two books.
Right.
So that is a little bit of a pain in the butt.
Yeah, and one new thing, so LG Seeds was purchased by GDM. So it'll be interesting as they go forward, you know, what that, I think we'll see a change in the way their seed guides because they had a change in ownership. So, you know, just a little bit of news there of purchased by GDM Seeds. And that leads us into our next guide, actually. And this is alphabetical, but Mustang Seed, who also used to be Legacy was part of it. And they're also owned by GDM Seeds. And this guide is almost the it is just straight info, which is kind of nice. Just charts, graphs, and really very little pictures in the Mustang Seed Guide. So the kind of a, you know, still does have the little graphics for each and then just has charts, but really a lot of info, not much fluff.
Zero fluff.
Yeah. It's just straight info.
They lean right into it on the back page right here. It says, whoa, that's a lot of info.
I didn't see that, actually.
I didn't see the page. If you're looking for the fun stuff, follow us on social media. So they're looking
to, there you go. That's
to lean into a little bit more of a, here's the basics. If you want more, come check us
follow
out.
Follow us that way. That is interesting. I do think they have a cool logo with the horse, like
it's just ready to kick some butt.
Yeah.
It's playing a dangerous game with Ford though. It's like a little bit more upright.
Right.
It's like a Bronco.
Looks like, yeah.
Like the Mustang of Ford, you're saying, yeah.
Right. Like the it's some similarities, but
all right. Partners brand. So this is kind of a Indiana seed company, How Indiana. And what is nice about that right away, you know, good amount of art, good amount of info on this one. And they right away, they kind of tell their mission, which I thought was cool, and just some about them. And I like that. I liked that it
pulled the... They're blending some of the color coding stuff that we talked about before with the good, excellent, average, no bottom end, no red,
right?
Really there, and then they've got the charts, kind of talking about some of the different aspects of each variety, and then a column, so three to a page column of a breakdown of each individual variety, where it lays out their trait packages. It's either conventional, Roundup, or Power Core, Viptera, whatever genetics they're looking at. So.
Yeah, like
it's fairly compact too. I mean, probably one of the smaller
books
in general. A lot of information, but in a pretty tight.
I like the package. Slider charts where it looks almost like a.
Oh yeah.
Little
like a gauge. On your phone. Yeah, you're right. So yeah, yield, seedling vigor, stock rating, like, and then it's got slider of how they are. And I like right away. There's a corn selection guide where Matt, you said about traits. I could see where this you might roll your finger over, but it's by day length, and then it lists the traits all at the top: conventional, GT, Viptera, round 52, whatever it is, and then you could see which trait packages that it comes in. But I think that'd be a way too that you kind of see which ones have a lot of trait packages, and then you could see which ones maybe have less and what it's kind of in that way. So.
Yeah. So I would say, like the Mustang book, it's got a lot of information, but it's fairly condensed.
A little more color.
More color to it, a little more pop.
All right, next up we got Pioneer Seeds. So strength, this one's always fairly, they used to have a bigger book, but they changed, about 10 years ago already. And kind of clear, concise, just charts.
Yeah, another one that's fairly,
But you kind of know what you're getting with this book because you're used to seeing it.
And this one, Matt better follow his finger across.
Yep.
Very good, in a concise manner because you could get offline. And
at least, though, they alternate colors.
Sure.
Between each line. So you can, I'm going to call it skin tone and slightly darker skin tone, peach, and I don't know if. What you
lighter
call
the other, tan and lighter, lighter tan lighter and tan. A lighter tan,
yeah,
or darker tan.
But at least your eye can distinguish between the colors.
And the silage is a green, and that's really easy to.
Yep.
And then blue for soybeans. So you're right, Matt. That having that two tone of every other line is.
Yeah, they're managing that chart finger draw a little bit better than some of the other ones by giving you a way to distinguish individual lines.
The only thing, Todd, I don't like about this book when they switch to this style is there's zero spot for notes.
Right, you're like cramming in.
Zero.
Yep. Right. Yeah, you can star stuff, but circle maybe.
Even if I thought of that, of like if they would move where they list the variety, like somehow give you a little more room in some of that. It could be there if they did it. I don't know if. Whoever makes it doesn't want, little open spots can look weird sometimes.
Or just like on the right-hand side of these pages, there's like a featured product.
Right.
Icons or decals.
And you
like,
could
make
move
that
those,
a page.
Right. And you could, or you could move those even more to the side and there'd be room there to. Yep. And then Matt had said this earlier too. They list the varieties on the one side, but then you got to follow it all the way across to the second sheet. They don't relist them. Which that is, yeah, I wouldn't have thought I liked that, but I do, because then you can follow it from the other way again.
And Todd, your favorite part is with Pioneer being 100.
Right, so...
Yeah, they leaned into the nostalgia this year.
Back cover is awesome.
Yeah, so Pioneer started in 1926, so in 2026 they turn 100, and yeah, just the coolest back cover with all the old covers on it, you know, from 1927, where it looks like it was more of just like a pamphlet, and then you kind of had some years of Seed Guides.
And I wonder what they did. Changes. In the 80s and 90s, they leaned in decently to farmers on the cover.
Yep.
Like how they chose those farmers. Right.
Even one has like a kid on it in 1983. Right. Whereas, yeah, and then now it's kind of a mix of just different logos, different things.
Yeah, I mean, the current logo, 1965. Since then, there's been the, I don't even know what you'd call it, like the budding corn plant with the infinity symbol underneath it.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different names for it, man. Yeah.
But you know, before that, it was more just the Pioneer name and a corn cob.
Or a kernel,
yeah. So, yeah, no, it's neat to see the evolution of how things looked over time. You know, the early on, it's a lot of the corn cobs are focusing on the corn itself, you know, some sort of harvest or somebody holding a cob. 74 and 75, it's like a V for victory, the way the guy's holding the cobs, which I don't know if that's intentional, but it was kind of interesting. 43 really makes me wonder, because you've got the, like the colored in cob and then the like the blackout cob. I'm not sure.
When it says high yields for your victory fields, so if it had to, but we went to won the war, but obviously
but it was going, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
the V for victory was big in the World War II. But yeah. Then to bring it back in the 70s, I thought was interesting.
Do you guys remember Pioneer would hand out like a little, like a notes?
Mm-hmm.
Bill, you probably... Matt, do you remember those or not? They'd have these, like, notepads and...
Yeah.
They were
like,
cool.
Fits in your pocket.
Yeah, fit in your pocket. It had some variety stuff. They were neat.
Yep, I do remember those.
And
I still got one.
Well, I found... Grandpa had a bunch of them.
Oh, really?
Something, yeah. And they're neat, you know, yeah. Like older ones that... Just kind of a cool thing, because some of those are neat to find because they had old notes in them. Plus, they had some of the nostalgia of the time that way, so it's neat. All right, and the last one we're going to talk about today is the Rank Seed Guide. So
last but certainly not least, no, homegrown varieties here.
And one of the best cover art, just it even has like texture to it. When you touch the word seed, it feels like treads. And yeah, just...
Feels like compaction. No.
You're right. Works hard.
Yeah, just that, but yeah, sonny.
It's working hard.
It's working not hard.
Works as hard as you.
Compaction.
So, and then just in general, this one puts families in, a lot of info, always good. One thing to note about this one is that it did change the look. It's last year it had kind of was the only one left where it had, and for many years it had the chart.
On the bottom.
On the bottom of the
on
page.
On the bottom, and yep. Then had like a... Above that had the like the specifics of the variety and everything, and they change now to the chart being like
kind of at the end.
At the end, right?
Yeah, they have the individual breakdowns and then charts at the end. But there again, too, they like Pioneer. They have the different offset colors as you're following the chart across, so helping navigate that a little bit better.
They could go with a decal route and throw that variety on the left side of that second page.
Both,
that would be helpful.
Or even on the far right, you know, just somewhere where it's on both pages.
They do, on some pages, give you notes sections, not every page, but there's places to take notes. And in general, you know, it's good font, good size, 3 to a page varieties, but there's room to write, which is nice,
right,
too, to be able to make notes and...
I do like their alfalfa naming. That's always been one of my favorites throughout the year, the gold and the pearl.
Yep, spring gold, spring pearl.
It's kind what of about that?
Quick gold, sun pearl.
Just kind of because within the name, you know a little bit.
Yeah, and you just know that
they have grazing pearl now, too.
I do think they're easier to remember way.
A little, you know it's a rank, rank variety.
Yeah, right. It's kind of follows that same thing. Yeah.
But overall, Todd, like all these seed guys, like you said, are really no big like breakout changes or major changes from past years. They've kept it pretty consistent.
Oh, one thing to note on the Pioneer guide, that had crop protection in it. And this is the first year where it's not.
It's not. Sure.
So, and that would have been added whenever Corteva sort of started. There was both, then it talked, you know, it was just two pages of talking about their crop protection. And this year that's not in there. So I'm assuming with the news where they're going to split the companies is coming, that had something to do with it. But I thought that was unique change that was different. But other than that, Bill, you're right. There, it was fairly a, you know, business boring as usual kind of year.
One thing with rank two that I noticed was kind of nice is they give you the GDUs to black layer right up front. It's also in the chart. But what I thought was interesting is they're kind of shooting their shot with kernel rows right next to it. Like, ooh, here's what you can expect around.
Ooh.
16 to 18, 18 to 20, like, I mean.
But that is good to know. And like you say, enough of these companies know that, but that's not always a thing that's listed.
All right. Any other thoughts on seed guides?
Please, if you're listening and you don't have a seed guide, you know, next time your seed guy is out, just ask him for one. Say, at least leave me a seed guide. Or Googling them up worked really good. So just, you know, paging through on your phone. They actually, most of them are set up fairly well. That it formats good on your phone and works. I mean, I remember days where we'd scan them in, Bill, and then have them as like PDFs, so you could, now they're all there, you can find it, and better quality than what a scan's going to be. So yeah, exciting, always exciting to get the Christmas seed guide and look through it. And
well, in the glossy pages when you would scan, sometimes you'd get a little bit of a glare.
Yeah,
somebody had to sit and cut all the books up because you can't.
You're right.
You couldn't just pull the staples out. Yeah. You actually have to cut down the middle to get the individual pages.
Not anymore.
All right. Well, there you go. There's a look at this year's seed guides. Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. John Kinzenbaugh is looking to sell 100-plus antique tractors from his private collection in Iowa. John and his wife, Marcia, of Eastern Iowa, are beginning to downsize their extensive collection of antique tractors. An online auction scheduled for November 4th. Lifelong inventor and builder, John Kinzenbaugh has been an avid collector for decades, but this is the first time any of this collection has been offered for sale. Many of these tractors have been stored indoors, including like new tires, and have been started regularly. Offerings range from pre-World War II iron to mid-20th century icons. About 35 non-running parts tractors and several lots of original tires will be sold as well. Catalog also includes about 20 late model items from the Kinsey factory and a fleet of side-by-sides. The no reservation auction includes more than 200 lots in total. Full sale catalog can be found online. An open house to preview auction items was earlier this week, October 27th to the 30th. So you've missed the boat on that, but you can still go online. Sullivan Auctioneers Big Iron Company is handling the sale, and check out what is available. So biddings closes November 4th. All items are in Williamsburg, Iowa, which is about 30 miles west of Iowa City. Loadout is scheduled for the following day, Wednesday, November 5th, to Friday, November 7th from 8 to 4. Shipping options are available. So if you're looking to add to your collection or maybe start one, it's a chance to have one of many pretty well intact. I mean, they've got picture here of the lineup. It's impressive how they took that picture, and you can see right down the line just all the front ends. It's a lot of IHs initially in the picture, but I'm sure there's
No, in the auction, too. There's enough IHs, but all kinds of
deer,
stuff.
Yeah, they got a picture.
Every
of
color, every unique looks.
Massey.
So it'll be interesting of what people bid on all that, and just kind of neat.
UTVs or Can-Ams, looks like. So, yeah, if you're interested, check it out. Make a nice little trip down to Iowa and pick up some iron. Now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. In honor of Halloween, talk a little spookiness. Should have some we should have changed this up into like scary, or not scary music, but you know, haunted music. Ooh. So, being Halloween, thought we'd talk about a local haunted agriculture area. Take a little ride down to Chicken Alley Road, which is just north of Seymour, Wisconsin. Legend has it, when you go down this road, phantom chickens will appear in front of your vehicle. There have been reports of people thinking they hit one with their car, so much so that they got out to see if the chicken was alive and to investigate damage on their vehicles, only to find nothing was there. Admittedly, this legend doesn't come with a slew of eyewitnesses or a solid origin story, but the legend also includes tales of vanishing snowmobiles in the summertime and a disembodied voice yelling at people to get out of the intersection if they linger on the roads.
I'm going to do all that now, Todd.
You're just going to go.
I'm going to try to hit linger. I'm going to go linger so I get yelled at, and then try to hit some non-existent chickens.
Fair amount of my relation lived on Chicken Alley Road, and I can honestly say I've never seen any of this, but...
That's why I was.
It could have been some of my relation yelling at people in the intersection. I'm not going to lie, but
Matt's trying to like prove this all wrong.
I'm not trying to disprove it. I'm just saying I've spent many a time on Chicken Alley Road and have not had these experiences. Actually, Todd, when I was in college, me and a bunch of my buddies in the dorms, there was some haunted things around Point.
Yep,
and we'd go try to find him, like the one, there was some bridge, I don't remember what the road was anymore, but we had to go there at midnight, and we were supposed to drive across, and there was somebody, I think it was like a bride or somebody that had died on that bridge that would appear, and so we'd always kind of try to find those kind of kooky things, and never had much luck, but...
No, he didn't.
Nope. So is it Chicken Alley or Chicken Alley Road?
It's Chicken Alley.
Chicken Alley.
It's just confusing, I think, to people.
There's no road.
There's no road on it. The sign just says Chicken Alley, and, like, I just wanted people to know that it is a road, you know.
Sure.
And it is kind of an alley. It's small, probably only runs 2 miles, you know, a mile one way and then turns and runs a mile a different way.
Yeah. No, it's not, yeah. There's not...
And I could see why the lore. I'm guessing the name obviously precedes the lore. So I'm guessing somebody, you know, with being on Chicken Alley, saw these phantom chickens. And
to be honest, I don't know.
I'm sure one of Matt's relations.
There's any actual chickens there anymore? Like, well, my great uncle had pigs, and I've
not pig.
Have cousins man. That have dairy cows.
Yeah.
But not, I don't think they have any chickens. Maybe they do.
Well, they don't anymore. They're getting hit on the road.
Right. They're the phantom chickens. Yes. They died of a heart attack. There probably were chickens there at one time.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure your relation is also the disembodied voice yelling just from a ways away.
It's probably my other great uncle just yelling at people all the time.
Get off the road. Get out of here.
Quit loitering. No, my mother-in-law is very big into supernatural stuff. She's from up in St. Germain, Eagle River area. And if you go into Michigan from there, just north about 20 minutes, half an hour, there's Paulding, Michigan, the Paulding Light. And that was a big thing that people would gather and check out the Paulding Light in lower or upper Michigan there, not lower Michigan. So she always talks about that.
No, all right. So if you're bored on Halloween tonight and want to go...
Yeah, just look. You'd be surprised how much stuff is really out there if you want to
in
find
your local area of...
spookiness.
Spooky. All right. Thank you, Matt. And thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. We're now on Spotify, so that's super exciting news. It's very easy to find us on Spotify. Just search Tilt Talk Radio. And that works on your Apple phone or your Android phone. Also on your Apple phone, you can search Tilt Talk Radio and Apple Podcasts and find us. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthag.com/podcast. And you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now we'll get into our cool beans that's corny and some current events. So cool beans.
Cool beans.
Cool beans.
Cool beans. Good job, Todd. Did it right this week.
I got it. This is about beans, too.
So it is.
It's like a double.
It's even cooler
bean. So our cool beans this week. China soybean trade deal is a net positive for U.S. farmers. Announcement that Beijing is expected to buy soybeans makes a crucial step toward achieving some market stability for U.S. growers in the near term and hopefully for the future. The White House's announcement of that China is committed to buying 12 million metric tons of soybeans in the current year and 25 million metric tons in each of the next 3 years was met with varying degrees of relief and reservation on Thursday. We have a deal that will provide at least some stability as long as China lives up to it, said Arlen Suderman, chief commodities economist for the StoneX Group. He believes the deal will be particularly helpful to the U.S. soybean industry in the near term. For one thing, we've been building up domestic infrastructure for biofuel production. Our domestic demand base is much stronger now, so even stabilizing the business with China is a real positive, he said. Soybean markets reflected a slightly higher bump on Thursday, but were well off highs after the announcement of the trade deal with China overnight. Final details are not fully defined, so it's unsure if the 12 million metric tons includes the 5.9 million metric tons already purchased this year by China, or if it will be a new 12 million metric tons. If it's new business, that would help hit USDA's target and help finish the year with ending stocks near 300 million bushels. So hopefully this is a good sign. Hopefully there won't be any backsteps. China will live up to it. The 25 million purchase for each of the next 3 years would be huge, as that would outpace 23 and 24 for purchases by China. So we'll see where things go.
Yeah, when they say ton, metric tons is like how much is it, but it's 441 million bushels, 441 million bushels of beans. And so like Matt's, you're right too, this is just now it's got to hopefully happen, you know, all this has got to happen. So right. Yeah, no, it's some.
Yeah, it's a step in the right direction. So hopefully it'll pan out. That's corny this week. The ongoing government shutdown has caused the fourth missed USDA crop progress report as harvest approaches its end. So USDA was expected to publish the 30th crop progress report of the growing season on Wednesday, but obviously that did not happen. Private estimates are suggesting that harvest reached roughly 72% for corn and 84% for soybeans nationwide by Sunday. And so the last four more reports are anticipated for the rest of the season. Last would be November 24th, pending, obviously, the government reopening. So, like we said, in our area, corn seems to be progressing. I know I was up north earlier in the week. Still a lot of beans coming off in northern Wisconsin. But in general, I would say the south is done with beans, starting to move on to corn. For us, other regions, most of Iowa, southeast Iowa is nearly done with corn harvest, according to Wiffle's agronomist Eric Wilson. Southwest and northeast Iowa are further behind, but making good progress. In Illinois, they're at least 90% done. Southern Illinois, they're at 75 to 80% in that neck of the woods. Corn harvest is happening in Minnesota at a rapid pace, according to Syngenta agronomist Tim Dahl. Very low grain moistures means grain dryers are operating at record speeds. You only have to remove a point or two. And Nick Groth, a Syngenta agronomist of Wisconsin, estimated that corn harvest is at 50% throughout the state. And he said nearly 80% of corn fields have been harvested in southern Wisconsin, estimates the percentage in northern to be about 20%. So kind of averaging out to 50. So good news. We've had good weather. No real big hiccups. We've even had some sunny days for those who are still holding on to those soybeans and trying to get them off this this last week. So
I know for farmers out there, like summer done, which just in summer still going, but please don't take that feeling for granted of how good a fall can be. I had a nutritionist friend. Well, yeah, Bill Eberle,
Friend
of the show. Bill just is like, oh, this fall's got to be great. This is got to be awesome. It's the best thing ever. And I just, when he told me, I'm like, it's fine. I didn't really think either way. But then the more I thought about it, I'm like, okay, he's right. Like, we have had a good fall. And sometimes you just got to take a step back and, you know, you're still going to have breakdowns. You're still going to have stuff. And some guys might feel too, like, almost behind because it's been such a good fall.
Yeah.
And they think they should get more done. So that's like a...
Weather-wise, it's been a huge win.
I mean, right.
We've had some delays, but not nearly what we could have had.
Right. So please, like I said, please just take time to be thankful for a good harvest.
And just remember, if you're hoping to make it feel dry, we're getting to the point of the fall where you're really not going to get much drier. I mean, it hurts with the price, but as Jeff Rank said a couple of years ago, and we've quoted a few times, nothing good happens in a cornfield in November, so hopefully you have opportunity to get going here as we move into November this week. So, all right, now we'll wrap things up with our Field Good Friday. 22 candidates are moving forward in the National FFA officer elections. So during the 98th National FFA Convention and Expo, a group of 6 dedicated and passionate FFA members will have the honor of leading the National FFA organization as the 2025-2026 National FFA Officer Team. Opportunity promises to be a transformative experience, allowing them to influence the future of the organization and inspire the next wave of agricultural leaders. 37 candidates vied for national office during phase one of the selection, and the 2025-2026 candidates advancing to phase two are Alyssa Schauer of Wisconsin. We also have Lott from, let's see, Missouri, Nebraska, Idaho, Washington, North Carolina, Tennessee. So one from Wisconsin, several from Midwest, again, Indiana, Missouri, Michigan, Kansas. So we'll see where things go, but you can watch Session 7 on Saturday, November 1st at 1 p.m. Eastern to see who will be named the National FFA Officer Team. General convention sessions will air live on the FFA Live streaming broadcast. FFA members and supporters can tune in and watch gavel-to-gavel coverage of the event. So,
good luck. The FFA, yeah, just the FFA Live, there is a lot going on. I mean, there's more than one channel, even if that makes sense, of stuff. There's 7 channels.
Seven
things, FFA Live, and right? Just, yeah, always exciting when the national convention's going on, and hopefully, yeah, everybody has safe travels back when it wraps up here soon. And they just also announced that it's going to be in Indianapolis till 2040.
Ooh, so wow.
I didn't, yeah, that.
Locked in.
Right. That was just, to me, it was like, I thought it'd be, you know, 5 years, 10 even, not like 15 years basically of locked in where they're going to stick to Indianapolis. So that was kind of some exciting news that FFA just announced.
We have crying young men on the FFA channel right now. They're getting some awards.
And they're crying.
I just flipped the live stream, and these guys are very happy with their accomplishments and very proud. So you can tell that they're...
giving hugs, not drugs.
Yeah, they are. They're excited. Actually, it might be the... Actually, now that I look at their jackets, I think it's the outgoing...
Sure,
the outgoing officers.
The outgoing officers are talking, so yeah.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So this week we talked seed guides and some of the highs and lows of the books that we received this year. In our spotlight, we took a look at John Kinzenbaugh's sell-off of many of his antique tractors from his collection. Ag History Minute, we talked about a local haunted area of Seymour. Cool beans this week. China trade deal expected to result in some soybean purchases. That's corny, is that we don't have the USDA crop reports to rely on to see where things are at across the states. And our Field Good Friday, good luck to all those seeking the national FFA officer election this weekend. And if you want to tune in tomorrow, November 1st, you can go to FFA Live and check it out. Thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.